Welcome back to a retrospective and background briefings coverage of the alt-right. And let's now go to a broadcast from August the 14th, 2017. And joining us now is Brian Mann, who's currently in his last year of a six-year program of studies at the Rabbinical School of Hebrew College in Boston, Massachusetts. He'll be ordained as a rabbi in June of 2018. He served as an Israel Fellow of Atrua, the Rabbinical Call for Human Rights, and served as a lay leader of the Moshe Kavod House, a social justice-based Jewish community, and Keshet Boston, devoted to the full inclusion of LGBT Jews in Jewish life. He's just returned to Boston after joining counter-protesters at the white supremacy rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, on Saturday. Welcome to Background Briefing, Brian Mann.
Thank you so much, Ian.
And Brian, you and some of your colleagues decided to go to Charlottesville. Obviously, you knew ahead of time what was going to happen there, at least in terms of this white supremacist rally. So let's talk about what happened on Saturday, just take it from here. You and your colleagues gathered as this gathering of white supremacists, neo-Nazis, people waving both the swastika and the Confederate flag, dressed in military gear, many with high-powered military-style weapons. And there you are with your colleagues confronting them, and you have what, the prayer shawl and your kippah, your yarmulke on, and you're pretty clear how you're identifying yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So we had gathered for a sunrise service where Dr. Cornel West, who put out the call for 1,000 clergy to come in Charlottesville in solidarity, preached, and then we gathered as clergy to kind of prepare ourselves and marched from that church down to confront everyone that you just mentioned. And so once we got there, we formed a line on a single file line with our arms linked on one side of Emancipation Park, where basically directly in front of us were the militiamen in their uniforms with their high-powered rifles. And then the park is raised, so there was like a small kind of wall-ish thing, and on the grass, kind of above us, were barricades with state police, behind the state police more barricades, and then where many of the white supremacists, Nazis, neo-Nazis, alt-right, fascists, call them what you will, were gathered and standing. But, you know, don't get me wrong, even though we were locked arms below them, they started, you know, chanting and marching behind us through the streets around us. They came up to us at points. I was, you know, I heard people say, you know, well, oh, look, it's a bunch of kikes. So obviously they saw my tali and saw my kippah and, you know, used a slur for Jews. And they also said things like, what is this every, you know, lesbian minister who's ever been ordained? So very clear homophobia and heterosexism on display. And obviously with their chants of, you know, blood and soil and you will not replace us, very clear racism as well. It was scary. It was terrifying.
Well, they were also chanting, Jews will not replace us. So do you have any concept of what this idea of being replaced means?
I mean, thank God I don't share their brain, so I can't speak from that perspective. But my understanding is that what they believe is they believe that there is a quote-unquote demographic genocide happening because, you know, there are more and more, you know, people of color, Hispanic people, Jews, minorities, queer people, I'm sure they'd even say, you know, either coming into this country or being born in this country or being proud of their identity in this country. And so they see it as, you know, a quote-unquote genocide of white people is some of their language, or that, you know, because of the way demographics are working or because of, you know, more marginalized identities being accepted on college campuses or for whatever reason, that, you know, white culture, quote-unquote, and white people, quote-unquote, are getting replaced, or their ideology is being replaced, or their, you know, whatever is being replaced by what, ideology of love, ideology of acceptance, ideology of tolerance, ideology that celebrates all people?
Well, I spoke yesterday with a professor from University of Virginia, Charlottesville, who also witnessed this alt-right, which actually I don't, you know, approve of that term, the alt-right. That's, I think, that term that they want to be called themselves, because they clearly are neo-Nazis and fascists and whatever terms you want to apply. But certainly I wouldn't give them the benefit of the doubt of calling them what they want to be called. But she was telling me, though, that she saw these thugs beat up a young African-American man literally in front of the police station, and the police did nothing. So was that your impression, that the police were not really engaged in? You said they were there as a sort of barricade, but the melee did take place, did it not?
Look, I'm going to be completely honest and say no. It was the police that gave the Nazis and neo-Nazi groups, like, the legal permit to be there, right? They were the ones that said, this is legal, this is allowed. It was really the Antifa that came through and really protected not only, you know, not only the marginalized communities at threat, not only the people of color, the queer people, but also the clergy. I wasn't with this group of clergy when they did this, but as things got violent, my colleagues and friends went out into the streets in their robes to use their bodies to protect marginalized identities. So I wasn't there to see this, but as some things were described to me, they would, you know, go out with the intention of putting their bodies between white supremacists and, you know, people most at threat, people of color, visibly Jewish people, visibly queer people, so on and so forth. And if white supremacists tried to, you know, get violent with the clergy or move the clergy so that they could continue beating on people, Antifa would move in and protect the clergy with violence on those white supremacists, get them to back off. They really stepped up and protected the community and protected the clergy in huge, huge ways. So, you know, to your point about police, like, the police really did not step in until the Antifa came through, got the Nazis to incite violence, and that's how the rally got shut down, right? Richard Spencer didn't get to speak because the Antifa incited enough violence that, and the Nazis responded with enough violence that the police made this, again, previously legally permitted rally where they said, sure, Nazis, come on through, illegal.
Right, but a lot of the coverage is sort of pointed out or tried to point out that the Antifa and the Nazis kind of cancel each other out. They're equally violent, and that was one of the perhaps one of the reasons why President Trump himself tried to say there was violence on many sides. He said it again, on many sides. So that is not a fair description of the Antifa, according to what you're saying.
No, not at all. In my mind, right, like, the Antifa isn't just randomly attacking people. The Antifa aren't beating down black people in a parking garage of their own accord. The Antifa aren't, you know, coming through the streets of Charlottesville every day for months now, targeting and inciting violence in the streets. They came through strategically. They made enough noise and gave enough awareness of who they were that anyone, including clergy, that did not want to be there when things got violent, could clear out. People were able to clear out before they got there, and they went and they targeted white supremacists and Nazis. They weren't just some mob looting or beating things up or, you know, destroying things willy-nilly. They were strategic, they were planned, they were organized, and they protected us. And some clergy, who I don't think want to be on record, but some clergy after the fact have said they literally saved our lives.
So what is the problem then, you think, with the president not recognizing and trying to equate your side, if you will, with their side as being equally violent? And particularly when the neo-Nazis were carrying swastikas, I mean, you'd have to have total historical amnesia not to know that the Nazis resulted in the deaths of about 50 million people, including hundreds of thousands of U.S. service people during World War II. The Confederacy is not a lot better. That was the greatest death toll per capita in the history of America, the Civil War, and yet they're proudly waving the insignias of a genocidal maniac to protect a statue from a traitor who led this country into a civil war that cost the lives of hundreds of thousands of young Americans on both sides. Again, still the highest per capita death rate in any war, including all the wars combined, the Civil War itself. So that's what I find extraordinary, that are we just, as Santayana said, if you don't understand history, you're condemned to repeat it? What's the problem here with this historical amnesia?
Yeah, I mean, right, this is the same president that when David Duke called out to endorse him and told white supremacists and neo-Nazis and fascists to go out and vote for him, said, you know, I don't know who David Duke is, you know, right? He at every point up until and including the day of white supremacists that murdered people, let's not forget Heather Heyer. Let's not forget that, you know, not everyone came out of this alive. Let's not forget the many black and brown people who were injured that day by these fascists, right? And we have a president who on that day refused to say the words white supremacy, refused to say the words neo-Nazis, refused to say the word fascism. And long before in his campaign, right, I think many of us who were paying attention saw the writing on the wall, could read between the lines, could see what he was saying. And to your point, right, we're seeing kind of either signs or shirts or whatever of the Confederate flag and the American flag together, or a Nazi flag and the American flag together. And some of these people are trying to claim that they're, you know, proud Americans trying to, you know, stand up for American, you know, culture and dignity or whatever. And my favorite response to that on Twitter is, we literally fought a war over this. Or as my friends corrected, we literally joined a war over this. You can't support the U.S. and the ideals that the U.S. stand for and also be a neo-Nazi or a white supremacist or a Klansman or a fascist, because those don't go together. And I can't say much about what goes on in our president's brain, and I don't know how much of it is, you know, willful ignorance, how much it is he is trying to preserve his base for the next election. But you know, to have a spokesperson for the White House come out, you know, a day later to denounce white supremacy versus doing it yourself, really doesn't sit well in my book.
Well, just in closing, it seems that the white supremacists have not learned anything, that there's no even concept of repentance and shame, particularly over the death of the young 32-year-old woman, Heather High, that you mentioned. She, of course, was killed in a terrorist-style attack with a car, which we've seen ISIS use in Europe, and at least those ISIS have claimed that their people did these acts, both in London and in France and in Berlin as well. Hardly any difference in terms of methodology. And in terms of the continuing hatred that pours forth from these people, on the Daily Stormer that you mentioned, the neo-Nazi website, they referred to Heather High, the young woman who was killed in this horrible way by the 20-year-old American neo-Nazi from Ohio. They described her as a fat, childless, 32-year-old slut. I mean, where does this hatred come from?
That's a really good question, and I don't know, but I feel like what I need to say in response to that is that doesn't feel so different to me than when a person of color is murdered by police and all the media outlets immediately talk about their criminal record, or immediately talk about, you know, he seems like a loner, or he maybe did drugs that one time, or, you know, he has a felony charge for shoplifting, or, you know, she did X, Y, or Z, right? The media can spin any story any way they want. And it's not surprising to me that a hate-filled website would spin and talk about, you know, and talk about a murdered woman in this way. because unfortunately, it doesn't feel so different than the way that the mainstream media talk about the deaths of people of color. And, you know, where does this hate come from? I don't know how it could be stopped. I mean, we've seen reports from the mom of one of the white supremacists who is now known, say, you know, I don't know. I didn't know what he was going to. I thought it had something to do with Trump, right? She did not talk to him about what he was going, why he was doing it, where his views were. And I think that's where it starts. It starts with us talking to those closest to us, our immediate family, our friends, our coworkers, our neighbors. And it's hard. It's really friggin' hard to talk about white supremacy and talk about racism in this country as white people or even as white passing people. But if we don't do it, our children, our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers go to a white supremacist rally carrying torches, and that's worse.
Well, Brian Band, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much.
And again, I've been speaking with Brian Mann, who's currently in his last year of a 6-year program of studies at the Rabbinical School of Hebrew College in Boston, Massachusetts. He'll be ordained as a rabbi in June of 2018, and he served as an Israel Fellow for Torah at the Rabbinical Call for Human Rights and served as a lay leader of the Moshe Chavod House, a social justice-based Jewish community, and also Keshet Boston, an organization devoted to the full inclusion of LGBT Jews in Jewish life. He's just returned from Boston after joining counter-protesters at the white supremacy rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, on Saturday. And that was from Background Briefing's August the 14th, 2017 broadcast. We'll take a brief station break, then be back with more of Background Briefing's alt-right coverage from August the 15th, 2017, with an interview with a former neo-Nazi.